Thank you very much. It's been very, very significant, my relationship with the Adult Institute over the years. And at the end, when I'm finished, if people have questions, I'd want to say a few words about that. But very often I get caught up in the material, and in case I forget, somebody should remind me that I had planned to do that. The topic of Christian Zionism, I think, is something which is very, very fascinating. And as far as I'm concerned, it's rather recent, my involvement in it. I think most people, I became aware of the phenomenon, I guess it was in the 1980s or the 1990s, and it took me completely by surprise. It's not something that I would have expected to find, at least superficially. People like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and John Hagee, fundamentalist Christians, and you'd see them on TV talking out so powerfully in support of Israel. And when I see people talking, Gentiles, especially Christians, talking in support of Israel, I'm not used to that kind of thing. We're used to that. I'm prepared for being condemned. I'm prepared for attacks. Anti-Semitism. No one's prepared. Jews are not prepared for being supported. And seemingly so vociferously. So I didn't know what to make of it. And is this some kind of a gimmick? You know, because the whole issue of missionaries and trying to get a foothold in terms of proselytizing Jews, and so on and so forth. I really didn't know where it was coming from. The whole notion of Christians being supportive of Israel, of Christian Zionism, it seems to be an oxymoron. It seems to be a contradiction in terms at first glance. So I resolved to try and, I think it's very important though, given the fact that there is a potential source of support. I mean, John Hagee says, he calls it a marriage made in heaven. 7 million Israelis or Jews or whatever, 50 million Christians, it's a powerful force to be reckoned with. So I think it's incumbent upon the Jewish people to be able to formulate some type of a response. But my objective tonight is really not to get involved in specifics on what we should do and so on and so forth, but rather to understand where the first thing you need to do is to try and understand it, to make sense out of it. Once you can understand it, you can have a better sense of where to go from there. So I resolved to look into the matter. The question, of course, is what's the methodology? How would I be able to make a determination as to whether I think it's realistic, whether it's a sincere phenomenon, whether it's a valuable phenomenon? So the method that I chose was to study the theology. I wanted to understand where is it coming from? What are the doctrines? The standard doctrines of the church do not lead logically to a position of supporting Israel. So what are the doctrines? And I started to research. I figured if it's rooted, see, religion is a very powerful force. No matter how insane some religious ideas are, no matter how, it doesn't really matter if those who believe in it, they believe in it. It's a very serious phenomenon. The idea of blowing up innocent people and you go immediately to a heaven with 70, that idea is absolute insanity. Yeah, but those people who believe in it with absolute faith, they act on it. So it's important to know what the source of it is. So I resolved to try and study it essentially from a theological basis, a theological background. Where is it coming from? What are the underlying doctrines? And to what extent is it, if it turns out that it's not really rooted in the basic theology, and maybe it's just a gimmick, it's just a new device and by which they intend to lure Jews in and so on and so forth, then it's a danger. But if it's really rooted in their theology, then it's something which they absolutely believe in. As Jews believe in Israel, and most Jews believe in Israel, and then they're real Zionists. So the question really is, are they true Zionists or not? Now I want to give I want to present this to give an overview, basically, the traditional attitude. I want to start off with the traditional attitude of the church to say, to get a sense of where we're coming from and what type of development has taken place in the world. Things do change. There's been very, very significant changes, even in the attitude of the church, of the Catholic Church, and the attitude of Protestantism. And then we'll take up this new phenomenon itself. Where does this fit into the picture? Now, you know that historically, the church has had a very unique, I'm talking about the Catholic Church, has had a very unique relationship with Jews. Jews are always different. They treated Jews differently than members of other religions for obvious reasons. For example, for a Catholic, for a Christian, proselytizing is very, very important. It's a religion which is based upon missionary activity throughout the world. But there's a special mission to the Jews. The idea of converting a Jew is completely different. That's like the most significant thing that you could possibly do. Now, the reason for this you have to understand is because it's not a separate religion. In a sense, the Christianity emerges from within Judaism. Jesus is a Jew. He observed the Torah. And the what they call the, I'll use the terms, the Old Testament. So everything is really stemming from Judaism and the Jewish people. So it's a whole completely different phenomenon. And they claim, their basic claim is that all of the covenants, all the promises, and so on and so forth, everything has been fulfilled through Jesus. And now that's the religion. That you have to believe in Jesus and salvation and so on and so forth. That's their basic idea. The only problem is, though, what about the Old Testament? What about the Jews? What if that's the case? If it's true that that was just a temporary phenomenon, and now the ultimate goal, everything is fulfilled, so what about the Jewish people? What happens to them? What happens to the covenant with the Jewish people? They have to deal with this. It's not so, theologically, they have to give an explanation, because here you have the Jewish people, and the Jewish people are still keeping the Torah, and they still claim to be the chosen people. So what do you say about that? The early theologians of the church had to work out answers to these kinds of questions. I can't go through all the particulars, all the developments. I'm just going to deal with this in general terms. The general, and this is the most important idea, the most important idea that dominated the church attitude towards the Jewish people and was responsible for the persecution, for the anti-Semitism, for the hatred, and so on and so forth, the most single significant idea is the idea of replacement theology. Supersession. Which means to say that was then, that God's covenant with the Jewish people existed. They can't deny it. The Jews were the were the chosen people. No longer. It's over. That's it. And they have been superseded. Who are the new chosen people? The Christians are the people of God now, because they believe in Jesus. So that's very, very significant. That led to a steady process of downgrading the Jews. The Jews are no longer the people of God. But of course they have to answer the question, well, if this is true, and because they're the ones that were given the books, and all these books point the way and lead to Jesus, so how come the people of the book themselves reject Jesus? That's the biggest question. That's the biggest problem. Wouldn't you think that these people that God spoke to, which they admit that God spoke to, shouldn't they accept Jesus? Well, that's a huge problem. Because they're a living testimony to the fact that all their claims are just not true. Had they created a separate religion that had nothing to do with the Old Testament, fine. There'd be you wouldn't have this kind of a conflict. So then, successively, they begin to demean the demonization of the Jew. Yet there's something wrong with the Jews. That the Jews rejected Jesus. The very rejection of Jesus shows you that there's something wrong. That they're an accursed people. That itself becomes a very, very significant sin. And because of that, now, take a look at the suffering of the Jews. The Jews are dispersed. The Jews must suffer. The Jews cannot be a thriving people, because how can a people rejected by God be a thriving, successful people? The Jews must suffer. And they did everything they could to make sure that it would happen. Believe me, they contributed a lot to it. Kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And there's a very big historical argument between, because the Jews indeed were in exile. We weren't in our land. We were dispersed. We were a persecuted people. How could this be a people of God? Well, that's the big debate throughout history. Our answer is, you'll take a look at the Torah. The Torah says God warns us continuously that if we sin, if we rebel against Him, eventually we will be cast out of the land. But the Torah also says, in spite of that, you'll be dispersed. Everything that's happened to us has been predicted in the Torah. Including the return, which is that's a tough one for them to swallow. But in spite of everything, the Torah makes it very clear. When they'll be in the, I will not reject them. The Torah makes it very, very clear that God is, that God will never break his covenant with the Jewish people. We claim that this is punishment because we are the chosen people and we've sinned and we'll be punished and in due time we will return. Because the covenant with the Jewish people cannot be abrogated. That's the claim of the Jewish people. The church claimed differently. That's the argument. They say, no, it's over. Goodbye. Goodbye, it's over. But by the way, it got worse, of course. The sin, the greatest sin of the Jews was not merely the rejection of Jesus. You know, there was a bigger sin. Because at first it was just the rejection of Jesus. But then as time went by, they got together, they took a vote, and then they decided that he was God. In the Council of Nicaea, they voted. There was a vote. And they decided he was God. Whoa, one second. If that's the case, now let's look back at the crime of the Jews. That wasn't just killing Jesus. That was deicide. Deicide. The idea that the collective guilt, the guilt is on the Jewish people, and they're guilty for deicide. I say it's basically only attempted murder. You can't kill God, but at least be realistic about that. Because if they had succeeded, so then there's no God, there's no religion. What are we fighting about? Anyways, that became a very powerful tool for the persecution of the Jewish people. And you see from this, if that is your foundation, it's clearly impossible with that kind of to be a Zionist. You can't be a Zionist. Because Zionism is based upon the fact that the Jewish people are the eternal people of God. That we can explain the exile. The exile is punished, very serious punishment, dispersion for our sins. God will never, ever abandon us. And the biblical promise is that he will restore the Jewish people to the land of Israel. Then you're a Zionist. Of course, the Christians couldn't accept us. So how can you, that's why it becomes very difficult to begin to understand how a Christian that's rooted in these types of ideas can be a Zionist. But you'll see, it's very interesting. What's the greatest theological crisis for the church in all of its history? The return of the Jews to the people of Israel. It's not by accident that the Vatican couldn't recognize Israel, could not recognize Israel. This is the greatest refutation. According to their theology, it was an impossibility. I'm very serious about this. Intellectual honesty would do it. How do you explain this? Wasn't this the crux of the debate, of the argument throughout the centuries? Isn't this the art? We claim that we're the people of God. We will return. Indeed, now we've returned. Don't you have to admit that you were wrong? No? No. But that's very, very interesting. All of the persecutions, all the historians of the Holocaust agree that the teaching of what Jules Isaac, the historian, French historian, referred to as the teaching of contempt, played a direct role in the Holocaust. Was very, very, a very, very significant. Nobody denies that. The church itself has admitted it. Whatever, to what extent they've admitted it and even apologized for it, the Protestant church and the Catholic church. What I mean to say is that the Holocaust, the extermination of the Jews, was not a Christian phenomenon. It was Hitler. He was a racist. His whole ideology, it wasn't the Christian phenomenon, but everybody points it out that it would not have been possible unless all of the people of the countries of Europe had imbibed this anti-Semitic teaching that was there from youth. The fact that all of Europe stood idly by and didn't protect it, with the rare exceptions, I can't go through all the, like Denmark or the countries did, there were some, you'll find that there were some of the people who are Christian Zionists today that did protect the Jews. Because they had imbibed this whole philosophy. So the way they were raised, this demonization of the Jew, that's something that's not such a terrible thing. That's what the Jews deserve. I mean, they killed them and they deicide, etc. That attitude which produced such a powerful anti-Semitism, and as I said, I have not seen one historian that doesn't agree with this thesis, that the Christian anti-Semitism was a major contributing factor. But as a result of the Holocaust and the aftermath of the Holocaust, it shook the core of the church. There was a tremendous outcry. People saw when the camps were opened up and people saw and the idea that anti-Semitism and what it leads to and the role of the Inquisition and the church teaching, it did bring about a new era in a introspection of the church, if you will, interfaith dialogue and so on and so forth. It did lead to certain major changes, which are of significance. For example, the Catholic Church, in a famous encyclical, I think it was 1965, Nostra Aetate, in which they, and this is an amazing thing, the Catholic Church doesn't change. They basically revoked centuries-old teachings of the Church. That is to say, the most important thing, as I mentioned, replacement theology. They negated the idea of replacement, which is to say that the Church does not replace the Jews, and they affirmed the legitimacy of the Jewish covenant with God. At least they affirmed it in terms of doctrine. That's a very big step forward. That's a very significant thing. Just to show you a little bit the language, in a 1998 document called From the Church, we remember a reflection on the Shoah. But it must be asked whether the Nazi persecution of the Jews was not made easier by the anti-Jewish prejudices embedded in some Christian minds and hearts. It's about as far as they can go, but there's much more to this. Did anti-Jewish sentiment among Christians make them less sensitive or even indifferent to the persecution launched against the Jews by National Socialism when it reached power? So you see that there's general acknowledgement. But in the Lutheran Church in Germany, the Protestant denominations as well, as a result of the Holocaust, it's a very important step forward. They rejected the notion of replacement, of supersession, and they reaffirmed the validity of the Jewish covenant. Of course, if that's the case, then what's the basis for Christianity? They haven't resolved the question. Also, it's very important to remember that the church renounced the blaming of the Jews for the crime of deicide, which is also one of the most significant factors in the persecution of the Jews. And they said that you can't blame the entire Jewish people, and you certainly can't blame future generations, and so on and so forth. So they removed the stigma of deicide, which was a major factor. And just as significantly, I think it is the official doctrine of the Church that anti-Semitism is to be regarded as a sin. So these are very, very significant developments, mind-boggling, because the whole foundation of the theology of the Church, in my opinion, has been overturned. I just wanted to quote to you from the Lutheran statements about the role of Christian anti-Semitism in paving the way for the Holocaust. Their language is a little bit more honest. They said, the Presbyterian Church noted the following when it rejected replacement theology in 1987. Quote, it is agonizing to discover that the Church's teaching of contempt for the Jews was a major ingredient that made possible the monstrous policy of annihilation of Jews by Nazi Germany. That's a little bit more of an acknowledgement, more to the reality of what took place. So you see from this that things can change. It's a very heartening type of a development. And something that we should acknowledge, simply because I'm talking in terms of practical terms. I don't mean to say that I don't need. That's me. I'm very confident in my Judaism. It never bothered me if they said that our covenant has been revoked or whatever it is. I don't need it on any personal level at all. I'm completely confident in the validity of the Torah. But when I say it's significant, practically speaking, to the extent that there are people that use this as a basis for persecuting Jews, the fact that the Church renounced these hateful teachings is something which is significant from a practical point of view, and it's to be appreciated. But this is not Zionism. The Catholic Church is not Christian Zionism, nor are those Lutherans and Protestants, because they do not... In order to be a Zionist... See, they can't go so far as to acknowledge that the Jews are the chosen people in the sense that all the biblical promises in terms of the future and the Messiah and the return to Israel and so on and so forth, that pertains to the Jews. No. So they don't look at the return to Israel as in a theological sense the way we do. For us, it's filled with tremendous theological significance. It's practice, not just a practical thing. So as I'm just mentioning that this is important. These are important developments. But this in and of itself does not lead necessarily to Christian Zionism. Indeed, Rabbi Soloveitchik talks about this a great deal. For the church, the state of Israel is nothing but a huge theological problem. And not to mention the Six-Day War. Oh my God. And the return to Jerusalem. The return to Jerusalem. And the Kotel. Jews praying at the Kotel. The flag of David flying. This is a theological nightmare for the church and for most of the Protestant world as well. Because while they don't officially practice replacement, but deep down they have to believe in it. Because you can't have two chosen people. There's no way that you can have it. That's either or. That was their claim. You've been displaced, now it's us. Well, if you're saying this, so now you're saying that we weren't displaced, then we are the chosen people, so who are you? You're the strangers. They don't go that far. Logical consistency is not the hallmark of the Christian world. Now, I want to... What about Christian Zionism? What's the story? What's the story of Christian Zionism? The truth of the matter is, my research is, Christian Zionism comes before Jewish Zionism. The first real Zionists were Christians. They were a major in England, leading up to the Balfour Declaration. Barbara Tuchman writes about this, The Sword and the Bible. About there was the development of the idea of a restoration of the Jews to their land and building up the land began before Herzl, and as I'm saying, the first real Zionists were Christian Zionists. So what's going on over here? It starts in the 19th century. And it starts in England and Europe, other countries. There was a group called the Christian Brethren. It's not the only group. There were groups of people that were in rebellion against the Anglican Church of England because of corruption and many, they were dissatisfied with the whole direction of the Anglican Church. Indeed, many of the pilgrims who came to America were people who broke away from the Anglican Church. But one of the most important figures in the development of the theology, we're going to get into the theology of Christian Zionism, is an individual named John Nelson Darby. Did you ever hear the expression Darby dispensationalism? Premillennial, postmillennial. All right, I'm going to try and give a little lesson. See, it's not my style to be giving over Christian doctrines. It's just I don't feel comfortable, honestly. I'm trying to always give over Jewish doctrines. When I give over Jewish doctrines, I'm always trying to make sense out of it. Because deep down, they're all rational, they make sense. The doctrines I'm giving over to me, I don't want to be disrespectful. These doctrines are not appealing to me. But I'm just going to try, it doesn't matter whether I like them or don't like them. It doesn't matter whether they make any sense or not. These people believe them. That's what's crucial. That's what I'm trying to communicate to you. You got to know what the person believes. Now this Darby worked at a completely different theology. First of all, you have to realize he's a Protestant. Protestants are different than Catholics. There's many, many, many different Protestant denominations because they don't have an overarching church. So they tend to be much more independent and working out their own individual approaches. Another important thing about Protestants is that they take the Bible very, very literally. That's very good. The Old Testament, they believe in the Old Testament and they take it literally. If you take the Old Testament literally, that's very good. Because who are the chosen people? The Jews are the chosen people. And they believe that. The Jews are the chosen people. And they believe that all of the promises about to Abraham and your descendants and so on, they'll be a great people and so on, that's a reference to who? To the Jews. That's the Jews. There's no mention of Christians. There's no mention of the Baptists in the Old Testament. They take that very, very literally. Indeed, they share the same idea. That is to say, the exile, the dispersion. As when I mentioned before that the Catholic Church viewed our exile as being a punishment for the rejection or the murder or whatever it is of Jesus. No, that's not what the Bible says. The Bible says because you rebelled against God and so on and so forth. And the fact that the promise is that you will return, all this is referring to the Jewish people. The Jewish people are the people of God. And they've made a covenant. God has made a covenant with the Jewish people, and it's unbreakable. It can't be broken. What's the theology? However, they don't go so far as to not believe in Jesus. They're still Christians. Of course they believe in Jesus, and they believe that the ultimate, like the same basic idea, that when Jesus came and the ultimate, the fulfillment is through Jesus, but they don't have the same attitude of replacement. Dispensations, their attitude is, to try and describe it, is that God relates to the world with certain plans. And the plan tend to fail, then God goes to the next plan. For Adam, the plan for Adam was the Garden of Eden. But each man tends to sin, and he sins, okay, next plan. That's their philosophy. And then that led to that led to the flood. Then there's a new paradigm. But ultimately, the ultimate paradigm was the revelation of the Torah to the Jewish people. So that was the dispensation. That was the era of the Jews. Now, when Jesus came along, they also maintain that the Jews were supposed to accept him. That they can't get out of. That's for them, that's the ultimate development. But the Jews failed. See, the way they look at it is not the Jews aren't to be condemned. You see, Adam failed. David, that's the name of mankind. So the Jews failed to do so. But they don't blame the Jews for the rejection of Jesus. They don't blame them. Nor do they hold the Jews. They don't have no concept of deicide. And they condemn vociferously the way, how can you treat the Jews? The historical mistreatment, persecution of the Jews is the worst sin, because the Jews are God's chosen people. They love the Jews. So what God did was he put the plan for the Jews was put on hold. And now it's the next dispensation. This is the period of the church. The last 2,000 years has been the period of the church, because the church accepted Jesus, and they're supposed to be spreading the word of Jesus. But what they have in mind is the millennium. They believe in the end of days. This is a very, very significant belief. It's messianic. Christian Zionism is very, very messianic, and they believe that we're living in end times, end times. They're awaiting the return. I'll explain to you in a second the idea of premillennial, postmillennial, because there's different groups of Protestants. This is a very significant idea. And they believe that in order to usher in the golden age, the millennium, the return of the Jews to Israel is a step in that's part of the divine plan. So that makes you a Zionist. If you believe that the Jews are the chosen people and that cannot be abrogated. I've heard these preachers speaking when they talk about the Jews and the Jews are the chosen people. And you believe that it's inevitable that the Jews must return, that this exile is temporary, the Jews must return. And that's part of the divine plan to usher in what we would call the Messianic era, whatever. Just using. So then you're a Zionist. And they believe this. This leads to a certain attitude. This leads to a certain attitude towards the Jews themselves. First of all, it leads to on a personal level, of tremendous love for the Jews. And they believe that the fate of America must support the Jewish people. They're very, very powerful, politically involved. They believe that we must, and the verse, first of all, they have a tremendous sense of gratitude to the Jewish people, ironically. Because what we joke about, we gave the Christians, we gave you your God, we gave you Jesus, they take that seriously. They say, we got everything, all of our religion, and all of our teachings, and the Old Testament, and Jesus from the Jews, so the Christian world owes a tremendous debt of gratitude to the Jews for everything that the Jews have given to us. That's very unusual. You've never heard that before. Moreover, the verse, we just read it a few at the beginning of Bereishis, I will bless those who bless you, I will curse those who curse you. They take that absolutely literally, and they say, this is John Hagee. I don't know if anyone heard, perhaps you can see on YouTube, when he spoke in front of AIPAC. You'd have thought he's a rabbi with unbelievable passion. And his theme is, take a look at history. Every nation that treated the Jews well prospered. When Egypt treated Joseph well, Egypt prospered. They became the most... And when they mistreated the Jews, where did they wind up? The bottom of the Red Sea. And he goes throughout history, every tyrant who treated... Where did he wind up? What happened to him? Where is Hitler now? Where is it? Israel lives. Israel lives. And he says everything, all the goodness of America, everything that happened, that we became such a great nation and wealthy, the superpower of the world, is only because of the way we treated the Jews. And that's the basis of his theology. He preaches this, well, at his church in Texas. I mean, you'd think it was a shul to have Stars of David and so on. So completely, completely based. Everything is rooted in support of Israel. So this was translated, but people like Jerry Falwell, and these are people that Jews in general tend to be very, very leery of, especially politically speaking. Many, many Jews are liberal, and these are the most conservative people in the world. I don't know if you'd agree. I don't know how many people would agree with their positions with regard to gay marriage, with regard to abortion, and many issues. You probably, I don't know the political views of the audience, but Jews in general tend to be very democratic and liberal. On all of these issues, these people are completely the most conservative people in the world, but they are the most ardent supporters of Israel. It's a major plank in their constitutions. I'm talking Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell. When Menachem Begin was one of the first Israeli prime ministers to notice this, he formed an alliance with Jerry Falwell. After the bombing, you know, when they bombed the Iraqi nuclear reactor, I think it was 1981, so everybody condemned Israel, including the United States, including Ronald Reagan was the president. And Begin had to come to Washington. He was met by Jerry Falwell, and Falwell pledged the full support of all of the movement was just beginning then. And indeed, you can tell. I can tell when I hear a senator speaking, and he's from some obscure state that has maybe 14 Jews, and he's speaking so vociferously pro-Israel and the settlements, I know this guy's a Christian Zionist. It's very easy. It's very easy. George Bush was a Christian Zionist. People were surprised. I wasn't surprised about the fact that George Bush, the second, was, I think most people would agree, he was very, very supportive of Israel. Not as much as you would like, because nobody could ever be like that. But in terms of fighting against terrorism, Israel has a right to defend itself, the Lebanon War, there's no daylight between the two positions. By that time, the Christian right had assumed tremendous power. Most of them are in the Republican Party. And they exerted, I mean, Bush himself, I believe, was very favorable on a personal level, very supportive of Israel. But aside from that, his base, the base is very, very important. The Christian Zionist movement is a very, very powerful tool for the support of Israel. They're very, very serious about it. Indeed, they're very much, their political attitudes are very much in line with the what you would call in Israel the most right-wing positions. They're completely against giving up land, the land for peace. And they don't view it in purely practical terms. They view this as the divine plan, as part of the divine plan. They are looking, but you have to understand where it's coming from. Whereas what's going to happen in the future? What's their view of the future? That's a little bit interesting. Their view of the future is the doctrine, it's premillennial, that in the end times there's going to be a period of tremendous suffering and tribulation and wars, tremendous wars. And they have this notion of the rapture. Do you ever hear of the rapture? Okay, it means to say that before the return, all of the believers, the true believers, which basically means Christians, are going to be removed suddenly, left behind. Suddenly they'll disappear. That's what they have novels about, this Left Behind series. They have novels about this, as though you're on an airplane, and all of a sudden you go to the restroom, you come back, and half the people are gone. Half the people are gone. Where'd they go? They went to heaven. And they've been removed, they're in heaven, and they're going to be up there. All the believers will be saved from these tribulations. Of course, the Jews will not be saved from these tribulations. The end times, the tribulation, not going to be a good time for the Jews, because the Jews don't accept Jesus. So after that whole thing, Jesus comes back and he's going to fight against all these forces of evil. That's their doctrine. That's why it's premillennial. Premillennial means that he will come before the millennia and he will usher it in by destroying all the bad guys. And then what's going to happen? Ah, the millennia. 1,000 years of universal peace. Why? Why? What's going to happen then? What's going to be the ultimate thing that's going to happen? The Jews will accept Jesus. At the end of the day, you can't get away from that. At the end of the day, that's their view. That's their eschatology. That's their view of the future. They can't go to sleep at night unless somehow, somewhere, the Jews will accept Jesus. That's their belief. So, there is a... obviously, there's an agenda. There's an agenda. There's a motive. And that's their theology. Nevertheless, that's the question that you have to really consider. In my opinion, then, is Christian Zionism, when we first started talking about this, it sounded absurd. Is it real? Are they true Zionists? Yes. Yes. It's not a phony. It's not a gimmick to convert Jews. It's not. They began their movement before Jewish Zionism, before Herzl. And people like Hagee say that it's not a quid pro quo. You don't have to support us in return. We do this because we have to do this. Because we have to love the Jewish people. And they're involved, not just in Israel and supporting Jews in Israel, but Jews in Russia, Jews around the world. Their record, Christian Zionists who existed in Europe in the Holocaust, many of them risked their lives to save Jews because of these theological beliefs. And Hagee talks about when, in the days in 1947, when the radio UN partition, his whole family was sitting around. His father taught him that the time is going to come when the Jews are going to return. He was in the, just like Jews would describe the same phenomenon. It's a genuine phenomenon. It's not a phony thing. It's theology. They really believe this. Of course, it's connected to their ultimate Christian beliefs that the Jews will eventually accept Jesus. Fine. But for the moment, this is real. They support Israel. And they're completely opposed to any pressure on Israel, to any weakening of Israel, and they're committed to the greater Israel. They're not interested in giving back land to the... They don't have a very kindly attitude towards those Arabs who are enemies of Israel. In fact, they don't have too much patience with the secular Israelis today who don't have the same view and are willing to give back, and they're just looking at things in pragmatic, practical terms. But there's a downside. It's not that simple. I'm not telling you, my purpose here tonight is not to reach conclusions, what should we do, so on and so forth. The truth of the matter is there's not that much that we can do anyways. But it's more a question of an orientation, of an understanding. It's very, very tempting to say, well, look, we're weak. We need allies. That was Begin's attitude. How many friends do we have in the world? This is a powerful force. You're talking about at least 50 to 70 million Americans who are organized, have a following, and are prepared to... They go on missions. They set up institutes. They go to Israel every year. How can you turn away from a thing like that? There is a downside, though. What is the connection between... What about missionary activities in Israel? Now, not all Christian Zionists are that deeply involved in mission. Every Christian is missionizing in one way or another. The question is how aggressively. Hagee claims that that's not the point, because they believe that the millennium is going to come, and one way or another, it doesn't matter what we do. We can't hasten it. That's his claim. Truth of the matter is, however, that there are many missionary. Many of these Christian Zionists are heavily involved in missionary activities. And they've created a whole new danger. Ironically, it's an irony of history. The doctrines of the traditional church, of replacement, of rejectionism, while terrible, from a purely spiritual standpoint, these doctrines are more dangerous. These doctrines are more dangerous. Did you ever have Jews for Jesus? Did you ever have Messianic Judaism? Where is that? That didn't exist from the church. Couldn't exist from the church. See, because the church claims that Judaism is finished, it's replaced. So convert. The Jews throughout history resisted conversion. They gave up their lives. A few, but most of them gave. Why? Because then you'd have to abandon Judaism. That's it. You can't have it both ways. To become a Christian means an abandonment of Judaism, and deep within the soul of a Jew, he's not going to abandon Judaism. What is the new approach? You don't have to abandon Judaism. This is a fulfilled Jew. If you convert now, you're not giving up Judaism. You're a Jew on a higher level. You're the fulfilled, the ultimate Jew. Don't give up Judaism. Be a Jew, but be a Messianic Jew and accept Jesus. That's a completely different type of a message, and it's had a devastating effect. Jews for Jesus is a very, very serious challenge, precisely because they say they don't condemn the Jews. Precisely because they say, we're not taking you away from Judaism. We want you to be Jewish. Go to shul, say the prayers, wear a talis. You go to one of these places, tillin, do the mitzvah, shake the lulav, yeah, and accept Jesus. That's a much more dangerous approach. We've never had to face that before. So you see all the good things, Christian Zionism on the one hand, the fact that they don't reject Judaism, the fact that they affirm Judaism, is a terrible, terrible spiritual challenge, spiritual threat to the Jewish people. And that's the dilemma that we face. And it's getting to be a big, big problem because clashes emerge. And that is to say, the more aggressive they become in terms of missionary activity in Israel, so it evokes a reaction. It evokes a reaction from the Israelis. The religious parties start to protest and they start to have legislation to restrict missionary activity in Israel. When that happens, they react. They react and they exert. Now they've got a tremendous amount of influence in all the countries around the world, and they mobilize to put pressure on the Israeli government not to impede them, and it has an effect upon the Israeli government. Many, many times, the government sort of, because they're unwilling, they don't want to offend. Once they become entrenched, and once they have so much power, financial power, political power, and so forth, it becomes very, very difficult when the Israeli government has to, or tries to, restrict their missionary activities. That's the dilemma that we face today. On the one hand, I mean, it's important to realize this. It's important to know that in terms of America, people in the Senate, you'll be able to recognize it now, what I've told you. When you'll see a senator who's not from a Jewish state with a population, and he's speaking in terms of supporting Israel, and it's support not to put pressure, and even the settlements and so forth, just look into it. You'll see. 99% this person is a Christian Zionist, and he does so for religious reasons, not because of political considerations. So that's an important thing to know. Now, I'm not telling you what to do politically, because I know that there are other issues that you have to do that balance yourself. All things being equal, as far as I'm concerned, that's something which is very, very serious, especially at this moment in time when there's so much pressure upon Israel. The fact that there are people who are running for office and the wholehearted support of Israel is a very significant part of their agenda. That's very important to me. But it's a problem, though. It's a problem. It may not be that much of a problem in America, because we're talking here about senators. And these senators are going to try and exert influence on the candidates. As I said, most of these people are situated in the Republican Party. And they're not involved in the missionary activities in Israel. It's more of a problem for Israel, how the Israeli government has to navigate the relationship with the Christian Zionists who have established very significant institutions in Israel, and with tourism and with schools and with pilgrimages and so on and so forth. The stronger they become, they're going to have clout. And when they have clout, it's a very serious part of their agenda. They're not content to sit around and wait for the millennium and then they'll all, that's very nice, but they're actively engaged in missionizing, and there's many Jews coming in from Russia and so on and so forth that don't have a Torah background. See, if Jews had the proper Torah background, if we were educated properly, I wouldn't worry about them. Ignorance of Judaism, that's the real danger. And many people have written about this. If we were secure, if every Jew had an education, he understood the Torah and commitment, there's no way he could accept this. It's not difficult to break it down. That is such a problem of our times. The fact that the state of the Jews today, in terms of the tremendous, massive ignorance of Judaism, has created so many Jews who are vulnerable to this kind of thing. That's the real danger.
That's why it becomes a practical problem. Let me just read to you from this, just briefly, to give an example of what I'm talking about, the practical concerns. In the 1990s, anti-missionary sentiments were again running high because of the Christian Zionists. And a number of Orthodox and non-Orthodox members of the Knesset came out with initiatives to outlaw missionary activity. In 1996, an initial first-round proposal to curtail missionary activity passed the Knesset vote. But then the complex and paradoxical nature of the relationship between the evangelical community and Israeli society became unprecedentedly clear. Missionaries operating in Israel called upon their supporters around the globe to raise their voices against the impending law. Quote, "We call upon the international Christian community to join us in our opposition to this law," reads one of the appeals. "As Christian believers in the God of Israel and in Jesus the Messiah and Savior of the world, we have a special respect and appreciation for the Jewish people and the nation of Israel. We seek and pray for the welfare of all of God's people in the land. We view with grave concern the erosion of Israel's democratic freedom by this proposed law." See, they're worried about democratic freedom insofar as it restricts them and their missionary activity. "Israeli embassies and consulates in countries with evangelical populations were virtually flooded with letters of protest against the law. Many wrote directly to the Prime Minister in Jerusalem. The standard letters emphasized that they were written by friends of Israel who wished the country well and were writing to warn the government that the passing of such a law would turn its current supporters against it." See, it comes with a price. So what happened? Who was the Prime Minister back in 1996? Anyone remember? He's the Prime Minister right now. The second time around. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who at first offhandedly supported the bill, changed his mind and promised evangelical activists he would oppose it. Apparently the pressure worked. The need of Israel, the weakness of Israel, the need for the support, the practical political support, outweighed the concern for the spiritual welfare of Israel. That's a very big battle that we're engaged in right now. The aborted attempts at curtailing missionary activity in Israel highlight the paradoxical nature of the relationship of evangelical Christians toward Jews. The evangelization of a people they see as chosen and whose country they strongly support. It also points to the nature of Israeli realpolitik, accepting help from Christians whose values and agendas differ from their own. So it's a very, very fascinating story. And my purpose tonight was to sort of give you an overview, an education, and to just be able to understand the phenomenon, where it's coming from. Obviously, more research is necessary, but now I think hopefully you'll be more on guard, more alert to the situation. I just want to conclude again. I think we can all take away from this what I mentioned before. How much the defense of Israel, the support of Israel, which we're all committed to, is not expressed merely by money, by political measures, by military measures. That's very, very important. But first and foremost, we have to be Jews. We have to study the Torah. We have to support Jewish education. We have to raise our children with the proper education. The spiritual element, that is the ultimate foundation. Throughout all the centuries, no matter how much we were persecuted, the other side of persecution was the fact that when you persecute the Jews, they remain true to their heritage. And unfortunately, as we see in America today, when we're accepted and we have freedom and opportunities, very often it has a negative effect in terms of the assimilating factor. Jews can never, ever assimilate. We always have to remain firm and steadfast in our commitment to Judaism. And that way, we can have a better foundation for dealing with these types of issues. Are there any questions? Yes.
It seems to me that your objection is more to Jews than it is to the Christian right to apostatize. As you said yourself, if Jewish people behave like Jews, raise their kids as Jews, do
That's a very astute observation. That's very astute. Maybe I am opposed to the missionary activities, but I emphasize the other side because it bothers me so much. I feel so strongly that it's our responsibility, and that if we did have a genuine foundation of Jewish education, in my opinion, these things wouldn't be such a threat. Well, you're correct, though. I mean, of course, I support that's what the Knesset, I support the Knesset in terms of making laws to limit. But to me, it's a tragedy that's what we have to depend upon. That we're not strong enough spiritually so that they don't present any kind of a threat at all. So you're right, that's really what I emphasize. But I do agree, though. Of course, I support all the efforts in the Knesset to limit legally, to limit insofar as possible legally their activities.
No, but what I'm saying is, never mind the limitations. We don't need the limitations. I don't care what they do in Israel. Our responsibility is the Jews have to participate.
100%.
It's not the responsibility of the Israeli government to try and tell their people, oh my God, don't join Christian groups. It's our problem that we join Christian groups. And if they can, and it should be there should be a need for the Israeli government to set standards that create a conflict to the only friends they have in America. It should be up to us to be able to control our Jewish children not to participate in those organizations.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, that's the point that I was making. Yes?
Yeah, I heard a young man speak. Was it Aquinas there? Was a Christian Zionist. Christian Zionist lived in Israel, worked on a couple books, and he was trying to, you know, he was trying to get Jews to
right.
The Kibbutz threw him off. He decided he was in Israel. He wanted to come back to the United States. So he decided to learn Hebrew. And once he learned Hebrew, he realized that a lot of what he had been taught, that a lot of the translations were not quite honest. And today he's a black guy.
Tell you what?
He's a black
guy. Yeah. No. This is an excellent point. Both of these points together. No. I'm glad you both points are excellent. Because you see what could be? That's exactly what I said before. These people are doing the missionizing, their knowledge is very, very limited as well. But unfortunately, there's such Jewish ignorance that it poses a danger. If we were on the level where we ought to be, if we studied our Torah and we saw the beauty of the Torah and the rationality of the Torah, not only would, there's a further point, not only would it not be a threat to us, but we would have the ability to show them their errors, and they would come over to the true idea. So that's an excellent observation. Anyways, as I said before I leave, Elliot said some nice things, and people have been expressing some very, very nice thoughts in the last few weeks as we get closer to, you know, the countdown. From the point of view of the weather, it's a no-brainer, you know. I'll be sending you postcards, you know, when it's like 10 below. You'll see me outside by the pool, 75 degrees, you know. I'll be thinking of you every minute when I'm out there. But seriously, Elliot is correct. When I first came out, I was asked to participate. And I look at this as an opportunity and a privilege. Because teaching Torah, teaching Judaism is my life. And I'm happy I'm on all levels. I teach younger people and middle-aged, and they're all the same. And I was very happy to have adults. The idea that adult people... See, I don't believe that the person gets old. You don't get old. Forever young. Because you're forever young because your mind is working. And you shouldn't look at it that way. You know, I'm retiring, I'm slowing down. That's nonsense. Take care of yourself. Be active physically, health-wise, but be active mentally. A person is always growing. A person always has an open mind. You don't know what your spiritual horizon is. We don't believe that's it. You've reached this point, you're not going to change. That's not true. And I was very inspired by it. And I did prepare. I was able to go into areas that I normally may not have gone into, which the various groups that I teach that has their own subject matter. It was a creative opportunity for me. And also to try and direct these ideas at a different kind of an audience. All the audiences are different. So I gained enormously from it. I may have met some wonderful people and very nice rabbis. We got together from time to time to discuss ways. The rabbis are very committed to finding new ways to make it more interesting and so forth. So it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And on a different level, it was very inspiring because apparently we Jews don't have enough enemies. We have to have, you know, enemies amongst ourselves, with the Orthodox, the conservative, and this group and that group and all the different groups. So the idea that we could come together and share the greatest thing that we have, the study of Torah, that's what unites us, and that we could have this mutual friendship, this mutual respect, and to recognize that we're all Jews, and all Jews should be treated with the same dignity, with the same respect, indeed all people should. This was one of the most heartwarming aspects of the experience. So I pray for you all, and I hope my thoughts will be with you, and I hope I'll be on your minds, and we should all go from strength to strength and experience only good things and joy and nachas, and live to see the day when the Jewish people is truly united under the banner of Torah in the state of Israel. Thank you very much.